Nah, but mate, as I said to you, like, social media's fucked him. Like, I think once you write it and then it's there, you're fucked. That's my take.
He's done.
He's gone. Anyway,
won't talk about that.
Intro.
Welcome back to the Social Distance Podcast, everybody. Good show, actually. We start to talk about Georgia's inclusion. Well, we sift through a lot of bullshit at this for the first 8 or 9 minutes, so just persevere with us. We invite George to the team, and then we go podcast fishing, and George Jonesy brings on Daryl Impey, and we talk about him leaving the team, join George leaving the team, Daryl's last race. It's a good show. You'll like it. Like, share, subscribe.
Let's just run the intro and wing it like we always do and see what comes out of it.
Let's get ready to rumble! Front kick.
Just getting pulled in the dance move, chat.
My radar's going pretty hard at the moment, I think.
Will you shut up, man?
That escalated quickly.
Oh, we're going to need to get some more qualified guests on the show, eh?
I went to the All Blacks game the other day. Got a ball.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was that the one they choked and lost?
No, didn't go to that one. I don't even watch. Has that game even happened?
Do you know what I'm finding is a real hard sell on rugby at the moment? Because I'm like, it's a game I've grown up with, played my whole life when I was young, loved everything. And then, like, I had a friend, he was in France at the World Cup, at the Mountain Bike World Cup, and he sat down with a bunch of Frenchies, and he watched the game where the All Blacks lost, and obviously he was a Dutch guy, and he was, like, obviously supporting the All Blacks. And at the end of this, he's like, also, it's a shit game. It's such a shit sport. And I was like, if you just watch that game in isolation, he's got a point. Rugby at the moment, I just feel like World Cup rugby, and it's just like they've just managed to suck the life out of it.
Why is it shit?
Too many. Because you're not allowed to people's heads anymore.
You're not allowed to bash each other up.
You can't cut people in half.
Yeah, you can't cut people in half like you used to be able to back in the day. The days are gone of like just dropping the shoulder. I mean, granted, it's probably the right thing to do to protect people's health and well-being, but it's like, the law is so, like, when you take away, okay, there's this mitigation thing, but ultimately, if you, in any way, shape, or form, even if there's mitigation, like, even if the player's falling over and you're, like, going to tackle his legs and he falls into your, his head falls into your, like, arms, you're carded, you're gone. So it's like,
it's a crazy situation, though, the whole, like, HIA. I mean, they have it in league as well. You have this head injury. I mean, we see it in cycling. We remember Noxie getting the old HIA, being 5 minutes out the arse, motor pacing back into the bunch, and then they disqualified him. So it's like,
yeah, that's right.
It doesn't really work in cycling, but it made me think about what we used to do in school when I was watching, because I've been watching a lot of rugby league at the moment too, and we used to play this game called Bunt and Spear. So
Bunt and Spear.
There were two games we played. Yeah, so what you'd do is you would have two teams. You split into two sides, play in at like recess or morning tea, we called it. You'd play on the concrete court, and out in lunchtime, you'd play on the grass field. And you'd kick a high ball up as high as you can. And you had to just take the high ball while you had guys just running at you. Oh. And they were just
on so concrete.
Basically, you'd be so exposed and you would just get spear tackled. Like, they'd just slice you in half. But if you caught the ball and if they kicked it too far and you caught it, you were obligated to run it straight at the person and try and like bunt them off. And you weren't allowed to sidestep. You weren't allowed to do anything like this. And the variation of this, we would sometimes add a frisbee. So someone would kick the high ball and they would be like looking up, trying to take the high ball. And then someone would send a frisbee in at head height. And then often what would happen is you've got one eye on the high ball, one eye on the frisbee, and you fuck them both up. You take the frisbee on the nose and the rugby ball to the dome.
Yeah, so, George, you're never going to enjoy rugby, mate, if that's what your bar is of entertainment.
I got to say,
in half on concrete.
Like, there's some certain parts of the game that are a bit frustrating to watch, but like ultimately, I'm really enjoying the World Cup. I think I've watched almost every game, and I'm enjoying the competition because the reason I'm enjoying the competition is because the smaller nations that typically would get fucking hammered, which they still exist, those teams. But some of the smaller nations, for example, Fiji, like they've all stepped up such a level. And some of the bigger nations, for example, Australia, are actually quite shit. And they,
why is that?
Like, you, it creates like a, it's actually a cool competition to watch because there's quite a lot at play in the pool play. Like, there's some really good teams that could go out quite early. Like, there's a potential Australia won't make it out of the pool play.
Here's one for you, Jonesy. Here's one that, so someone said to me the other day, I think they were talking about Ireland, and they said, they peaked too soon. That they hit their peak, they are peaking too soon. And it actually just pissed me off. It's like, what do you like? This rugby's not a sport where you peak. It's not like endurance sports. So in non-endurance sports, the whole concept of peaking early is like the most frustrating concept in the world. Like, yeah, sure, these guys are fit, whatever. But like in endurance sports, you peak too soon, you then blow up massively. And it's like, it's at a biological, it's at a cellular level, you know, your body can't make the adaptations at the rate of the stimulus is coming in, and you just basically get in a hole, and you can maintain a level for a while, but then, you know, you're so skinny for a long time, your hormones blow up. All the, you know, there's this whole cliff you fall off when you peak too soon. But in rugby, it's like, or in non-endurance sports, cricket, let's say, peaking too soon in cricket, what the fuck is that? You know, you don't suddenly forget how to catch because you've been catching too much, and then you're like, oh, I've done too much and I've peaked too soon.
I agree with you. Like, and actually, it's not like, I'm less of like, what the fuck are they talking about? I'm actually more of like, I actually don't know what they mean by it. And I'd love for someone who does know the game, who does know rugby, like ins and outs, like to explain to me, like, what do they mean by peak in rugby? Because yeah, like George says, a physical peak in cycling is completely different because, you know, if you don't ride your bike for 3 weeks,
I think it means their necks are too skinny. You've only got like a month period where your neck is at maximum width and girth. That's what they mean.
Must be that, yeah. I'd actually like to hear from somebody who knows rugby
non-endurance sport, no non-motor-based sport, like human motor-based, you know.
And just, I'm sure the peak exists in those sports. I'd just like to know what it means, what it is.
I think it's mental. I just think it's like, how long can these boys go without, like, it's like on NRL, right? So people that don't know, rugby league is massive in Australia, and there's this thing called Mad Monday. And it's basically when the top eight's decided, and then there's a bunch of teams that are not going to play the final. And every year, Mad Monday, like, throws up some absolute gems, like, yeah. Remember the guy doing a bubbler? Like, it was like always just real rogue stuff that would come out of rugby league. You know, mainly these guys getting caught with like cocaine and photos of them sort of pissing in their mouths and all sorts of debauchery. And like, I feel like that's
not even a joke either. Like, it's
actually, that's not a joke. No, that genuinely happened. Look it up.
Yeah.
But
even that, like, hang on, just on that, whenever you hear those stories, I always go like, what group of circles is that entertainment though? Because it actually gives blokes as a whole a bad name, where so many women jump on the back of that and they go, is that what you blokes do? Is that what you do for laughs? You piss in each other's mouths and you're like, hang on a minute. I don't know anyone that does that for entertainment. Like, that I could have 10 palanas, like pints, and never my brain goes, hey boys, I've got an icebreaker.
Yeah, but I feel like something happens when you have a squad of 40 guys and you're in a lock-in.
But it's something like about rugby league. That's like,
yeah, something specifically rugby league.
Something crook.
Maybe the peak in rugby is like when you, it takes time to develop set pieces, certain plays, a certain skill level, and like let's say they start developing a set piece off the back of the scrum, like a set play off the back of the scrum, and it takes them time to refine that and get it like running smoothly.
How do you blow up? How do you go past it? You know what I mean? I understand the time to master, the time to develop the skill, but then at what point do you fall off the peak? A peak infers that there's a downward side of the peak as well. You know, there's the upward up to the climb up, and then the peak infers that at some point you fall off, which We peak too soon all the time. I'm specialist at peaking too early, blowing up halfway through a grand tour, you know? And like, I just, it's such a foreign concept. And the only thing I can think of is, like I was saying with this Mad Monday stuff, is basically it's when you can no longer resist the urge to piss in your mouth or whatever these guys
are up to
at rugby on Mad Monday. You know what I mean? Just mentally, they just can't not lock it down for.
Yeah.
But I also don't understand that really either, you know?
Well, you were talking before about like rugby losing, you know, the fucking big tackles and all that. Every time they talk about a sport sanitizing, you always got to tip your cap to ice hockey and how they've always maintained a level of, this is what we do. We drop gloves, kick the shit out of each other, and we wait and literally till someone hits the deck and then we break it up.
Mm. But I think it's easy because they've got helmets on. I mean, you could punch someone as hard as you can in the head.
No, they take them off.
They take them off, mate.
They take them off. They take their gloves and helmets off and just punch on.
And pull the jumper over them and then just like lay in. And the crowd is going nuts. Well, they're not, and they haven't changed. Have they sanitized ice hockey? I don't know.
What was the story about this bloke that might have been in field hockey even? Or maybe it was ice hockey. And I think it was a big story. He might have even gone to prison where he actually smacked the guy with a stick and got done for assault. Do you remember this? It was only within the last few years.
I don't think you can get done for assault in ice hockey because it's part of the game. They're like, they literally have players called the enforcer that comes on.
If you intentionally stick someone and smack them over the head, surely.
Imagine being the enforcer in ice hockey. That's a grim job. You don't even play the sport. You just come in and beat people up.
That's why I always love watching the ESPN 30 for 30s or whatever about sports that I just don't watch, because they always give you this insight. Like when they did that one on Wayne Gretzky and how he just, as you said, he'd have three enforcers on his team because he's a gun. They all want to fucking target him. But then you get the
Wait, sorry, who's Wayne Gretzky? I'm not familiar.
He's the greatest ice hockey player of all time.
Really? Yeah. So there you go. Nothing about the sport. Okay.
Well, so Gretzky was like a gun, and he was playing Edmonton. And Edmonton got this massive offer for the best player in ice hockey to come across to play in LA. And Edmonton were like, it's a lot of cash. Fuck it, we'll do the deal. They did the trade. They were never that good again, and LA went on to win a couple of Stanley Cups or whatever. But it was all about, like those enforcer fucking meat axes that, as I said, tip your cap. And speaking of sports, big announcement, obviously, a week ago that you were signed with Israel. What do you reckon of the backdrop, lad?
I love how, like, we did this announcement in collaboration with Israel Premier Tech on their social medias. Like, they had the cool idea of, like, let's combine social distance podcast with announcing George coming to the team. We do it. We do this cool announcement. It goes big. And then we say, tune in next week when we discuss it. We're now 12 minutes into the show. We're talking about how do you peak in rugby? Pissing in people's mouths and trading the greatest ice hockey player of all time from Edmonton to LA.
And George is going, I don't know who Wayne Gretzky is. Like, never heard of him. I was just noticing then, Daryl Impey's eyes, I mean, obviously if you're listening to this, it doesn't mean shit, but if you're watching on YouTube, he's got like the creep eyes above George's head.
You can see him through the gap.
You see him through the gap.
I feel like we should change that background because that photo is the 2023 Tour Down Under team.
Is it?
And I just feel like we don't really need to drag those faces and names. I won't say the names.
How did the team go? How did the team go at Tour Down Under?
All right.
Cool. We don't need them to be attached to this dribble.
Yeah, we don't need to attach them involuntarily to the show, you know?
All right. Let's flick it back.
So that was Simon Clark, Daryl Impey, Corbin Strong.
Yeah. Sorry, lads. I saw the video of Daryl's last race, emotional, crossing the line there with Clarkie.
Do you know what was really a sweet moment? We were watching it. We were watching it up at Daryl's wife's, with Daryl's wife and kids, Ellie and the boys. And there was quite a few of us went up there to watch his last race, his last moment.
Yep.
And there was a moment when Daryl like crossed the line and we were watching it and it's, you know, it's pretty emotional. I was, you know, I see Daryl starts crying. I'm like, oh, fuck. It's, you know, a little bit gets you, you know? It's and then I look down at George? His son. I look down at his middle son and his middle son just goes, yay, now daddy's at home every day. And I was like, play the heartstrings, you know?
That was good to watch. We should have got him on the show, actually. Maybe we can get him on the show in a couple of weeks to talk about it.
Well, what's he doing now? Do you want me to go podcast fishing?
No, let's talk about George.
Yeah.
Let's talk about George joining the team. Daryl's leaving. George is joining. So we'll talk about the incoming. And then in the next 2 weeks' time.
What about the net loss for Israel Primatek?
Yeah.
Straight swap. We should get people to comment, like, you know, is it a great swap, Daryl for George?
Yeah, let's run through that. Okay, so let's call it a straight swap, which it's not. But let's say from a personality side of things, who comes out on top? From a physical side of things, who comes out on top? And from a, let's say, like purely like a results-based, who comes out on top? Given in the current state. So not
current states, not
Daryl Impey 10 years ago, not George Bennett 10 years ago, like Daryl Impey, George Bennett 2024.
Well, you're okay. You're upgrading your, hopefully upgrading UCI points.
Yeah. Well, you got 12 this year, I think, Daryl. So hope so.
So we're given a rough goal of 1,000. So let's say we're upgrading UCI points. So
that's the point in George's court.
How many points you got in the kit bag?
Heaps, mate.
Yeah. But then
we move the points thing across to the physical side of the physical category. I would say the fact that Daryl scored 12 points is because that's an indication of the way he shifted his role in his last year of his career.
Selflessness.
It was selflessness. It wasn't about.
I might win 800 points, but I've taken away 400 from teammates because I've just gone rogue. Is that what you're inferring?
Yeah. So Daryl is. So from a physical side, I'd say Daryl, compared to you at the moment, I guess completely different riders. You can't really compare it.
Do you think that they'll go into this with like assists? Do you think this will become a, you know how like a money from a money ball point of view? Do you think there will be like an assist kind of stat that comes through? Because like in one contract I was looking at for next year, before I signed with Israel, was helping a GC guy, and one of the bonuses we said, okay, well, if my sole role was to follow this bloke around and help him, one of the things we wanted was a teammate bonus. So when he wins and I'm there, I get the bonus.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, but it's very hard to get across the line. It's something that's very rare. But I think that it would be a great stat to encourage. Like
we always had them in Greenwich. Teammate bonus.
Yeah, early Greenwich had it, no?
Mate, they should bring back, you know, the bus driver, Lewis Murray, at Greenwich. Did you ever hear the story about him when he was riding for, was it Seiko? With Steve-O?
Onse.
Did you hear that story, George?
No.
And he was starting the Tour de France, and literally the morning of the start of the tour, one of the riders binned it and couldn't start. And they rang around all the different riders on the squad, and Lewis Murray was the closest guy who'd been on the cans and, you know, he was in shit physical condition. And they said, mate, we've just got to get here. We've just got to start. So they got him to the tour. First day was a team time trial, and he missed time cut. But he got piped out the ass in the first K. But the rule back then was if you start, you got equal chop of the prize money.
Oh, yeah.
For the whole Tour de France.
For the whole Tour de France. So you got missed time cutting the team time trial. But the chop back then was 60,000 euro a rider because they won all these jerseys, stages, mountains jersey, whatever. And he used that 60,000 euro. I think he retired, 2 years later or a year later, to buy a shop and set his family up.
Wow. Because we do it now. I think standard practice is now total prize money divided by the riders times the days you raced of the Grand Tour. So if you go home on stage 10, you get, 50% of the total prize money, your share of the total prize money, and the rest goes back into the kitty.
Do you think that that's fair enough, or do you reckon it should just be you start, you get it?
Well, it depends how you go out. If you're just crazy.
Well, you got COVID at the Tour last year.
When I got COVID, that was one, and then we went on, and I was like, this seems, shit. No, yeah, I think it is kind of fair though, because like, I mean, the problem
depends what impact you had on the race. Like, if you were only there for a week, but that one like stage seven, and you got sick, you got legitimately sick, you couldn't continue to race. But on that stage seven, you played a role that was so important to Pogacar or whoever winning the Tour de France, then you'd kind of be like, well, without that day, without what I did that day, maybe it wouldn't have happened. So yeah, it had to be a bit of a gentleman's agreement, I reckon.
We had this situation in the Vuelta when Primoz decided to put a rain jacket on the top of this rainy downhill. And it was in the COVID year. So it was late November, freezing cold. And like downhill through this valley and then finish. I think it was in like Formigal or something like this. And Primoz was like, oh, it's so cold. I need to put a rain jacket on. And I was like, rain jacket on. Couldn't do it up, but they were going full gas down the hill, pissing with rain. The peloton was blowing up. And he just is like pretty chill, you know. And he's like, no, they won't attack me. We get to the bottom of the hill with the pelotons in like 40 bits and me and Sepp are in the front. And then it's like me and Sepp were both top 10 or seven. I think we were like 6 and 7 on GC or something. And we both went, oh, fuck, you know. And that was the day where we both had to sit up, go back, get him, and we lost our GC completely. But, you know, whatever. We knew we were helpers. It wasn't a big problem. Yeah. But there almost needs to be a way where, like Sepp completely took himself out of GC that day, took himself by, like, 20 minutes out of GC.
He's not and a GC rider.
Nah, exactly. Exactly. And then – but I wonder, like, that one act, right, that one moment if no matter what happened after that, you should be getting, because without that, we lost the Vuelta 100%. That 1 5-minute passage of play, that is when we would have lost the Vuelta completely. Yes, absolutely. Or yes, we were losing. So I wonder, like,
that should hold more weight. Should more weight.
Can you wait these moments? Can you?
You have to.
But I guess at the end, the one thing I do think about is cycling's not like other sports like golf where these guys live off prize money. It's like, it's just a bonus. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, but surely the leader could step in the situation and be like, okay, that guy, that rider went home on stage 7 because he was sick, but he was influential throughout those 7 days. He's getting his full cut.
I think the principle of it is more valuable for the team chemistry and the, like, a rider's, if it's just a bonus, are they going to crack it if they go, well, why are we giving such and such more of a chop? And he was, if it's a bonus to prevent people getting their nose out of joint, wouldn't you just go, fuck it? You start, you're in.
I was thinking about this morning. I read that like Jumbo Visma took home like a third of the total prize money from the Vuelta. But then I was like, well, normally the leaders don't take a cut of the prize money. Mm. But on Jumbo, there was 3 leaders. So there was 5 guys taking, that's probably per rider the biggest haul of prize money ever. Because that's the 3 other guys wouldn't have taken a cut.
Yeah.
So who was the least? You can say
who did the worst job?
Who did the worst job? Who's going to get maximum cash hole if it's an equal chop?
And Jumbo.
Yeah.
I don't know. Roglic.
Problem is those 5 riders. The other 5 riders are all pretty good riders. Well, that's go on. Yeah. Why don't you name one? Name the worst one now.
Well, I barely watch it for a while, so I can't comment. I wouldn't even know half the squad.
So then the third category was personality. So it's one and a half points in George's favor and half a point in Daryl's favor, because I think the physical side you can't really separate it because it's just different. So they just give you half a point each, split the point. You take one for the potentially getting more than 12 points next year. And then the third one is personality. And again,
you can't split it.
You can't. It's a tough split.
Hang on. This is interesting.
I'd ask you.
Daryl was obviously doing a lot of social media content, selling his South African kit.
Yeah, that kind of knocks him down a bit, doesn't it?
Knocks you down a bit, I think. I think he's just sort of used the team as a way to cash in. Whereas George does not like social media. He doesn't like fans. He doesn't like people. I like that. He's not about the
George's unapproachability.
Yeah, I like that. He's just grumpy old man on the Muppet Show. You know those two grumpy blokes in the stand?
He sat out 3 or 4 podcasts because he just didn't want to do it.
Just didn't want to bar it.
And like, I like that. I respect that.
Don't fucking bother me with your WhatsApp messages about times. Here's a time. Yeah. Fucking never.
Yeah.
I'm not coming on. I'll give you a time. Never. Yeah. See that laugh you got out of George then? It's like, fuck, he knows you well.
I knew the whole time I was just thinking, when I those episodes I didn't want to do it, that I was trying to think of an excuse and I just didn't even have one. I just said I don't want to do it.
You just stopped replying. And me and Bills are ringing each other and I go, how's George going? And he goes, yeah, I reckon he's over the potty, eh? Okay. No shit. Let's put this horse out in the paddock. And let's hope that he returns home. He's like a dog in Delhi in the 2008 Com Games.
Yeah.
Hopefully he finally runs home.
So yeah, I
it's
almost,
a real niche reference.
You'd almost give the Delhi personality point to George, but I think, like, you know, joking aside, very similar personalities, both quite outspoken, quite opinionated, quite strong-minded.
Oh yeah,
both.
Yeah,
yeah, both essentially fuckheads. So
we'll call it a good. We'll say I'm stepping in. Stepping in for Daz. No, it's to be honest, it's been. Do you know what's been awesome is like UAE and Jumbo have been awesome teams. Like, seriously, the two biggest teams in the world, arguably. I mean, Ineos, maybe you'd chuck in that conversation. But the welcome has been, like, you know how, like, I feel, I compare it to this. When you go to work for, like, Deloitte or one of these big companies, you know, you're a bit more dispensable. But when you go to work with, like, I'm hesitant to say family because I feel like this is the term that's overused all the time and it shits me. When everyone says, we are family, oh, family fighting together, and everyone preaches this whole like...
Hang on. I've got a special guest. Yes.
Hey, Daz.
Daryl Impey.
Sorry, you got me in a good time, mate. I was a bit late. So I've been doing some merch pushing, you know? Merch pushing.
We were just talking about that.
So then I thought I'd come on and do a little bit more.
Funny you mentioned that because we were just weighing up. We started a category called Daryl Impey, George Bennett. We're saying you guys are doing this. So you've retired. Firstly, congratulations. So you've retired and George is coming in. So we're calling it a direct swap. And we had three categories. Who's going to bring the most? Is George bringing more or less in three categories? Personality, physical capabilities, and results. We decided that you scored, because you only scored 12 UCI points this year, George is probably going to overtake you in that, in the performance side of things, the points getting side of things. Physical side of things, we couldn't split it. Two different riders. So we left it half a point each. And then the personality side, we went down the rabbit hole about like how punishing your social media content is and like how much you push your merch. And
if you know what my theory is behind it, let me just get it all in now. Let's just push it a little bit more. You know what the theory is behind it? If I don't wear it, then who else is going to wear it? It's like you with your hat on. Every time you take a photo with me, you point to your hat. You know, like that the other day we played paddle and I gave him some Oaks wristbands. Yeah. And he said, let's take a picture for your merch. And I said, oh, that sounds like a good idea. And then I saw the photo afterwards and he's pointing to his merch cap. So, I mean, if anyone's going to push on someone else's social media thing, it's the guy there with a merch cap on his head.
That's true.
So...
Nah, we were just being facetious. We think that from the personality side of things, it's going to be again a pretty good direct swap. I'd say two good.
Basically, it was just a character assassination of both of us, Daryl.
Yeah, in a fun, loving way, though. I love both of you.
You know, we need a bit of personality in the team, so it's good. It's like George there. You know, it's because you know sometimes we lack confidence in the team, so George is going to bring a lot of that.
So how's retirement treating you, Imps? How many, you just on the beers now, dad duties, what's going on?
I've been doing some other duties. It's actually a good time I retired because we've had to sort out the house and sell some things off and, you know, before we leave. So it's actually giving me some time, Jonesy, to just kind of wind down a little bit. But Joe, I haven't actually stepped on it yet, mate. I have just been catching my breath, really. You know, I came at jet lag, I had all these things, you know. So, and then the kids, you know how it is. Kids are always running amok, so you don't get time to chill. But I actually, like, you know, the other day I was supposed to ride with Lucas, and I woke up and I actually thought to myself, I had such a shit sleep. I thought, I actually don't need to go riding. Yeah. So then I just said, sorry, bud, I'm actually not going to come. And it was like so nice not to have the guilt, you know. Yeah. Like the rest of the day, I didn't go, oh, I probably should have ridden a wide and a ride. Like, yes, you're lazy. I was just like, actually, yeah, you didn't feel like riding. So that's what it's about. So it was actually nice. And every time I've had a beer, it's funny because before I was having beers, before I'd retired, officially retired, I was having beers and I felt like I needed them. And then, like, now that I actually don't think I need them as much. And maybe because the pressure's off, I just feel like, oh, one's probably enough. You know, I don't even need, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have another one. Like, I don't feel bad about it.
It's just because, like, we live in, like, such extremes. It's like we have to do everything. You can't just do something in moderation, you know? It's like, oh, I can't just live like a normal. I have to do everything extreme. And that's also the bad things in your life. You have to do it in the extreme. And it's like, oh, today's a day I'm having off and I'm letting my hair down. So I'm really going to let my hair down. I reckon
I think it's just like you kind of put like a thing on these days. You like kind of like think, wow, on Saturday and Sunday I'm off. So then if I'm going to have a barbecue, I might have two or three there because, you know, I deserve it. I've had a big week or, you know, you kind of like put like emphasis on those days. Whereas now, like, you don't put any emphasis on just going to have a beer with someone. You kind of just like, I'm just going to catch up and have a beer. What's the big thing? But when you're riding a bike and you're trying to be a professional athlete, having a beer is actually a big thing, you know, because you're like thinking, oh, it puts me on the back foot. And like, we're not talking one beer. Yeah. Normally we have a beer, but it's like two or three, you know. So it's like, yeah, you're going to put yourself on the back foot for the next day. So, and then you're guilty the next day, and then you deal with that, and then that night you're like shitty because you like shouldn't have done that, and then you get the guilt. You still got a lot of years, George, where you're going to feel guilty, and like, yeah, I mean, it's.
Oh yeah, no, it's good, but I've always got my theory of, I think I've told the boys about this, is where you lean in and you create as many demons as you can, and in the 4 weeks you have off the bike, and you get to the point where you just have to punish yourself by living like a monk. And it's all about this flow and ebb of demons where you create as many as you can and then you spend a long time sort of exercising those demons from you later on.
I don't want you to go too deep into it, Daryl, because I think that people should go across to, even though I was taking the piss out of your social media, it's good. People should go across to your YouTube channel and watch your latest video of your final race. So you don't have to say too much on this show because people should watch it there. But just talk us a little bit through that last race. I mean, everyone could see you were pretty emotional, but I think it was really cool that the team as well that was there in Montreal and Quebec with you, they put some emphasis on the fact that you were retiring, and they made it a bit of a deal, you know. And the team was still ultimately trying to win the race as well, but it was never at the expense of like making you feel like, hey mate, thanks for fucking everything you brought to this team. Thanks for everything you brought to the sport before you came to this team, and actually made a bit of a deal of it. I thought that was that was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen or whatever, but obviously I wasn't going to say, oh, geez, I expect something to be done. But just that day that you guys surprised me with the, you know, everyone had the Thanks Dads t-shirts and then we had the team meeting. It was like special, you know, it was just all unexpected. I thought, oh, it'd be nice if someone did something, but I didn't really want to run it myself and say, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I kind of was just like, you kind of going there for the race and you're like, you hope that you do get a nice send off, you know. So it was really nice to have the team do such a great job. Like, I mean, everyone made me feel so happy and so like, and also just realize what you've done, you know. Like, a lot of guys are saying, like, what you've brought to the sport, what you've brought to other teams.
There it is.
That's it. He's got the shirt on. That's it. Those are the shirts we should be selling.
Those shirts are great.
They're good. Really good.
But that gesture, like, as you said, like, you don't want to be leading that, but just the gesture like that is fantastic.
No, you know, like, Jonesy, like, for me, the thing was, like, you want to, you feel like you deserve a send-off, but you also realize you're not, you know, Alejandro Valverde or anyone like that, you know. You're not, I'm not a prolific race winner that expects like the whole peloton to clap me through the line and things like that. It's, I mean, those kind of guys, they got that reception and I never expected that. But what I got for myself out of it was perfect. Like I got the dream ending when I came back and I was like, oh, how was I? I was like, man, I got the perfect send off. Like I ended it off on my terms. I could ride the front. I was nervous. It was wet. And like I could dish out pain as much as I could until I couldn't anymore. And I could end exactly the way I wanted. Like, sure, I would have loved to have raised my hands and say I've won the race. But like the thing to ride around that last lap, even by myself, and then stop and have a beer with one of the fans. Yeah. And like, that was just cool, you know. And like, when I said to him, right, hey, should I down it? You know, and he was like, you're gonna down that now? I was like, I think I am. So then I just did it and that was cool. Like, you know, like you can't script that awesome kind of stuff. You connect to the fans and you go, that's why I think when I came across the line, I was like so emotional because I know, and coming across the line there was like, and everyone was Daryl, it was just like, I kind of like soaked it all up and I was like, you know, this is the last time I'm going to race at this level with these kind of guys at the top level of the sport. I've chosen to go out. And then you think about like, your family and all the sacrifices they've made and you've made and everyone's made and you go, we've come a long way to get to this point, you know, like all your friends are there. It was like great to have Bill's there, like a real close friend, you know, that's like been there, done it with me for so many years, you know, even Clark at the finish line there. It was just like, yeah, it was nice, you know. It was, I mean, I would have loved my family to have been there, but, you know, at the end of it all, it's, all those emotions and all those years of sacrifice just come into one moment. And it's great to feel the impact you've made. You know, a lot of riders were patting me on the back when I was coming through the peloton. You know, that's nice. You know, you're coming out the arse, you're suffering, everything, and guys are going, mate, great job, mate, enjoy it. You know, like they know you're done, that it's so good.
And like people talk about the fairy tale ending in sport. Like in New Zealand, we call it the Richie McCaw ending, where he basically retired from the All Blacks lifting up the World Cup, you know? Man, that doesn't exist for many people at all. That exists like maybe for the 1% of greats.
Yeah.
Like it didn't even exist for Michael Jordan, you know? It like only exists for like a real, real small amount of people. And the rest of us, like if you can go out, if you can stop your career number one on your terms when you wanted to finish at the race you chose to finish it at, number two, not in a fucking wheelchair or on crutches, and with the people around you that you want to be around you to a degree, like obviously you would have liked your family to be there and they couldn't be there, but still to be around the people that you wanted to be there, finish when you wanted to finish and finish healthy, like, and with the admiration of the people that were there. Like the whole peloton feels the same, but there's only 150 people in that race. They all give you a pat on the back. Actually, you can't really ask for any more in this sport because the reality is like maybe Valverde to some degree, but ultimately no one, well, maybe Lance, I guess, but like people don't finish winning. You know,
I don't think he got the ending he was expecting.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But do you know what's crazy with this? Is like how many guys go out with a phone call from their manager in December saying, sorry, mate, they said it's a no, you know, they're not going to take you on. And that's how so many guys finish their career and go, fuck.
Majority.
Harry Borges was my last race and I know, you know, they didn't even get to accelerate it. They didn't know. They just don't get signed for the next year. They're done. See you later. And it's
no
like,
t-shirts, nothing.
No
t-shirts.
That
must be hard, eh? That must be hard.
It must be really hard. But the other thing on this that someone once told me, I can't remember what it was, he said like the most important thing in cycling to them was they were saying it's like not results, but it's to like earn the respect of your peers. So like, don't give a shit about what the public is speaking, what the, you know, the UCI points, all the shit. The main thing is that the people that you race against are like, fuck me, that guy's a good rider. Because they're the only ones that see. They're the only ones that see like the guys that are good that aren't the winners as well. So if you can finish with, like you say, the whole peloton going, mate, unreal job. That was that's something where you've gone, well, the peloton, in the eyes of the peloton, I was one of the best riders. More so, okay, the public knew I was good. I was, you know, I had the yellow jersey. I won the stage and the tour. But like, for sure, the peloton thought, would rank you higher as a rider than the, say, the general public in terms of, you know, what they saw when they raced against you. So I feel like that measure is quite a good like yardstick of like, was I a good rider or not?
But it's not even about whether you're a good writer or not, I reckon.
Or like, good teammate, a good...
But like, yeah, good teammate. It's like the legacy, okay, a big word again, legacy, but essentially like anyone who has a long career in any sport, they leave some sort of legacy behind. And that legacy can be measured in so many different ways. It can be measured by winning 10 grand tours, or it can be measured by like what you brought to an environment, what you brought to a team, what you brought to the sport as a whole. I mean, in Daryl's situation, coming from South Africa, like wearing the yellow jersey, all that stuff, like that's the legacy you leave behind. And even deeper than that, and more importantly, that is like the people you meet, the relationships you create. And when you stop your career, and you might move to Australia at the end of the year, and you might not see some of these people for a long time. But like those people, they won't say, "Oh, Daryl Impey was a good writer." They'll say, "Daryl Impey was a good bastard." You know, that's the legacy that people leave behind. Unless you're this fucking top winner, because those top winners, the legacy they leave behind is like, he was a good writer. He wasn't necessarily a good guy. So it's two different measures.
What would you rather, good writer or good bastard?
I think there's a t-shirt for that, isn't there?
Yeah.
What happened to that t-shirt? Did you sell out and not make any more, or what?
We sold them. Yeah.
Well, yeah, we need to chase that up. We need to get that spreadsheet.
We sold all the t-shirts. There's still some hats left, but the t-shirts sold. But we should do another run of t-shirts.
Yeah.
Anyway, Daryl,
maybe the Oak should make them, eh?
Yeah.
Push it up there. Just pushing it up there. I think there's so many things to retiring, and I don't think anyone will ever prepare you, because it's like having children. No one can prepare you for having kids, but it's like you stop and you think you'll be okay, and you also think in your head, like, I'll have all these jobs, and I'll work there, and I'll probably do this, and I'll get into commentary, and then I'll do some training, I'll do some coaching. But now actually when you stop and then you actually go, I've actually put all these thoughts that I thought I was going to do into action and process, and then and go through that whole process, then it becomes a different ball game, you know. Then it becomes a different way of thinking, and like, oh, okay, hold on, I'm actually going to do that all. It's actually not so easy to do as I thought, you know. And the reality does hit in. So I think you've really got to be ready to retire. You've really got to be in a good headspace. I think if you don't get that opportunity to do it, then that's what George is saying. Like, if you know, oh, actually, if I don't have a job by January, I'm in trouble, you know. Like, you know, if you haven't saved up and you haven't thought, okay, I might need some time to get through it, or you know, to work around it, and it sprung up on you, I think it must be super difficult. So yeah,
to be honest, it's actually something that scares the best
piece of advice. The best piece of advice, sorry George, this is a cod, maybe go on what you're going to say as well.
George is about to open up Maddie Pears and you cut him off. But
no, his fear is retiring. Yeah. But the biggest
keep going.
The best piece of advice I got when I was retiring was from my uncle, actually, you know, because I was fucking scared as well. I was like you spend your whole life cycling and then you stop it at 35 years old in my instance, and you're like, now I've got to start to do what everybody else did when they were 20 and went to university and figure out, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? What am I going to do now until I get to 65 when I can retire? And he said, why the fuck do you think like that? He said, if you think about what you're going to do for the rest of your life, you are closing so many doors. He's like, you're coming from a part of the world where you're very like in a luxury position where you bring some new perspective, different perspective. He said, don't think about what you're going to do for the rest of your life. Think about what you want to do for the next couple of years, or like 5 years, 5 years max. Go more than 5 years, because if you think I've got to do this for 20 years or 30 years, you're just going to close so many doors. Just see what comes in the next few years and do that. If you like it, you carry on. If you don't like it, you do something else.
See, I just see it as this big dark cloud hanging up over there, like a midlife crisis just waiting for me, whispering at me. You know, like, shh.
Yeah, you'll struggle.
Hey, before we let you go, Daz, just a random topic. We've talked about on the show once before about how blokes, we traditionally never throw away underwear. Like, I've got pairs of jocks in that fucking cupboard there that I reckon I've had since I was 18. They got holes in, but blokes were programmed not to do it. The other thing is, with circulation of shirts, there's like a top layer in your chest of drawers of shirts that are in the top rotation. But today I thought, no, I'm going to start fucking digging. And I went to dig and found like the old DOS Kiwis, which I don't know how it went to the bottom, but now that's in the top rotation. What's your general rotation now that you've got all these V-leckers? Do you just rip open new shirts every day, or how do you get your rotation of shirts going?
No, I try not wear it too much, you know, Jonesy, just when I'm socially visible, you know, the Lacquer stuff. It's funny the other day, you know, I make these shirts, they also do us. So like Duis can be like a bit of a funny word. It's like, you know, if you're South African, you know, Duis is a box, but you know, it's a bit more than, it can go further than that. I won't elaborate. But anyway, if you call someone a Duis, it's a bad thing. So, but I have these shirts. Anyway, and I was in town and I wore it. I thought no one will actually know. And this guy came up to me and said, "Hey, man, be lacquer, man." And I was like, "Yeah, cool." And he goes, "Yeah, can I have a photo with you?" I was like, "Sure, man." And he had a photo with me. And it's like, just do us. So I was just like, But anyway, well, he doesn't understand. But it's quite funny. I mean, it's one of those. It actually was my best sellout shirt. But the other part, to go back now is like, I think my shirts are going to have to change because I'm going to change size as well. So I think all those shirts that are there are probably just going to be pulled out the cupboard, and I'm going to have to get a new wardrobe because already I feel like I need to, like, and actually the new style now is just like, you know, oversized. So like all my shirts are, but I need to come back with the times because I feel like I'm young, I'm too old now. You know, when I was walking around with Corbin, he's like, "Oh, your shirts are quite tight and quite small." And I was like, "It's a normal shirt." And I was like, looked at him and I thought, maybe I need to. So like the other day I went to Zara with Oz and she was looking for a dress and things and whatever. And I bought myself my first oversized shirt. So now, brother, I'm going to walk around town with my tracky pants and my white shoes and then my oversized shirt.
I think that basically what I can gather, the style is to try and look as shit as you can. I think it's just trying to look like you've not tried at all. You know what I mean? I think that's the go.
It's like caps. Like I always thought like a nice pristine cap with like a cool, either like a flat peak or like just, it just looks nice and like in shape, you know? And now I've looked around and all these people are wearing these like dad hats that are like all crimpled and shit. And I'm like,
well, look at Jonesy's hat on his head.
Yeah.
It looks like it's just fished it out of the ocean.
Baggy green, mate.
Why have you been sweating so much?
Jonesy used to have which cap was it, Jonesy? You used to have
the green edge one.
It was like an orange green edge one.
Oh,
that
blue
one.
White.
That blue one you used to wear to every race.
That's right.
That one had some stories to tell, eh?
Well, mate.
Yeah. It was actually nearly like an orange green edge heirloom. Like.
Oh, yeah. It was fucked. In the end, it was cooked.
Hmm.
Thanks
for popping in, Daz. Thanks for doing podcast fishing, Jonesy. And hey, Daryl, don't listen to the first half of this episode because the sentiment kind of changed when she came on.
I said to her, "Do you want me to go podcast fishing? I'll get Daz on." And the reaction was, "Nah, we'll get him on in a couple of weeks. I have a chat to him." Then when he comes, I was like, "Hey, how are you, mate? Great to have you on." Two face.
Well, it's always good to be on you guys. It's always good to see you all together. So it's good.
And for those listening, make sure you go to Daryl's YouTube channel. What is it? Just Daryl Impey on YouTube.
I actually haven't finished. I'm at a point where you're supposed to like give it a name, and I actually don't know what to call it. So I guess if you just type Daryl Impey, it'll come up. But Joe, I don't have like a channel or a name. It's still like a long thing.
Go check out his last video of his last race. Go and buy some. We'll put the do always, Daryl. We'll put the link for your merch in to the description.
Thanks, mate.
Yep.
Appreciate it, guys.
And we'll see you tomorrow in your retirement. 2 days time in your retirement ride.
That's it.
Oh yeah, I was going to say, are you throwing a big retirement bash a la Bewley style?
Yeah, exactly, man. Like, it's like I'm going to do it like a little ride. And then I'll probably do a dinner as well. So yeah, gonna do dinner and ride and everything else, you know. Nice. Just take it as it comes, Jonesy. You know, just hang out with the boys, you know, and then.
Well, then hang we do out get a lot of Girona cyclists that listen to this, and there'll be a few that are riding now, going, "Fuck, I didn't get an invite to that. That must have been 3 days ago."
No, I've seen the WhatsApp. You know, I've seen the WhatsApp chat. Everyone's invited.
Okay.
Exactly, and you know what? Some of the guys that maybe aren't on is because we just don't see each other. And that's just normal. Like, I don't get invited to their parties. And it's just laugh. You know?
Yeah, but you're trying to sell them merch now, so you need to invite everyone.
Yeah, exactly. No.
Yeah. Good stuff,
you know,
mate.
You have to. You also want to keep it a bit intimate. And, you know, Jonesy, you don't want to get a Peloton. You know?
Well, like, we're going to throw a retirement party for you when you're out in Australia. I'll get Jerry Ryan to tee it up. So we'll drink nice red.
We'll do it down under.
Yep.
Get the boys together.
intimate, Daryl. We'll do an intimate function with all your Green Edge mates. And that's we'll drink the finest Mitchelton Red. Hey, even, don't worry.
Even Green Edge gave a nice post. I will say that. Like, that was also special. Like, you know, I wasn't in their team for the last 3 years, but then they actually, like, also gave a sweet post. So that was cool. Mm.
They didn't even do a post for me when I retired when I was in the team.
No. I know. Internally,
I saw that. I was like,
internally, they knew it was his last race, but externally, just like, get him out the door. Yeah. Talk about that. You're part of that 00. No, actually, you're not part of the 001%. You're part of the majority of guys that get the Ravi Shastri.
Me? Oh, yeah. I didn't know it was my last race until about 6 hours before it.
Yeah. Yeah. When you said, oh, can I write? Nope. You're out, mate. Okay. Sweet.
You know what I just realized is that I said Bills was actually at Canada. That's how emotional I actually was. He actually wasn't even at Canada. But you know why I felt like he was at Canada? Because they actually, him and Hannah actually organized a thing with my wife and them to come and be with Owls while I was watching while they were watching the race. So that was cool. So that I've actually felt like all my Girona mates, George was there too. Like they were all part of it. So even though they weren't there on the day, you know. So thanks for that, eh?
You'll have to listen to the first half of the show because I've already talked about that, mate.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm just backing him up then.
Yeah.
All right, go on, Yams. All right.
Good on, Yams.
Cool.
You're a legend, mate.
Thanks for having me, guys.
No drama.
See you later.
See you,
mate.
Ciao, ciao. Bye.
Darlene, what a legend.
We were going to talk about George. Up. We'll talk about you joining the team in 2 weeks' time. So tune into that.
Yeah.
We're going to need to stretch welter wrap.
I got to go. I've got to go real soon. I got a meeting in 12 minutes.
Yeah, shit. It's
not I don't know. I don't really want to talk about the welter because I've got welter fatigue. I'm sick of it. Mm. I'm so cracked on it because actually it was a shit race in terms of once Remco was out of the GC. And so what that meant was everyone just really honed in on the whole Jumbo Visma internal politics.
Yeah.
Because there was no real racing, you know, it was obviously it was super hard, but like when you got a team dominating 1, 2, 3, it kind of sucks the life out of it a little bit after Remco was out on that one day. And then it kind of just meant that everyone sort of just got on the Jumbo Visma hate wagon, and it kind of I feel like
a positive light out of the world is Caden Groves, man of the show. Mm. He's rocking a merch hat somewhere, Bills.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Yeah, he was unreal.
It's interesting that Jumbo Visma situation, though, just quickly is, I was talking to someone about it yesterday, and we all have our views and our opinions, and obviously social media was going crazy for a couple of days there. But what's interesting for me is that nobody except those 8 riders and those 2 or 3 sports directors actually know what the conversation was, what the agreement was, what the plan was. No one else knows, you know? And
I've got a pretty good idea.
We all have a pretty good idea because of when you watch the race.
We talked about in the last show, you've got to have the mongrel or your soft cock. They don't win grand tours by being soft cocks. They got that mongrel. And we saw the mongrel come out.
I sat on the fence with it a little bit. Like I think I'm probably like a bit of an outlier with it, but I think ultimately they did the right thing, and they supported Sepp to win the Vuelta. At the same time, I can see why you go to a race and Sepp wasn't the leader initially, and one of the leaders there, Jonas, was categorically the best rider in that race. If he wanted to win the Vuelta from a physical standpoint, he would have won the Vuelta. And so I can understand that side of it a little bit. But then once it got towards the end of the third week, at that point, I was like, okay, now it's time to support the guy who supported you. Mm. And ultimately, they did it. They may not have done it in the way that the public eye wanted it to happen, but they did it. So I'm actually all right with it.
Oh, of course. I mean, also, like the whole thing is, they're now at a point where they can just say to everybody, shut the fuck up. We went 1, 2, 3. We're a performance-based team.
Exactly.
The only thing that, like I was just saying before we got Daryl on, the only thing I'm getting a little bit of fatigue on, and this is across every team, is the whole family chat. The whole we are family, we are because let's just call it what it is, it's pro sport. Yeah. And that's okay. Yeah. It can be pro sport. It can be, it's a high level, it's a ruthless, like we were talking about, guys don't get jobs when they've got a family to feed and they've been a loyal servant of a team for 10 years. Guys don't get, you know, it ultimately business. And so, and that's absolutely fine. And I don't have a problem with it. And I just get a little bit of this fatigue on family. We are, you know, and many teams are guilty of this when I know that there's this internal friction and it's sold as like that the public want this message of family. I don't look at it and go, oh, those guys are great. They're all family. And it's hashtag whatever. Let's say the jumbo one, Sarmaven or ride together or hashtag whatever. I don't feel like that adds anything going, we are family, we are brothers in arms or brothers and whatever the Bora one is. So why not just go like, why not own it a little bit more? Lean into the fact that this is cutthroat. This is top level. I mean,
so instead of the hashtag Wolfpack, it should just be hashtag today we're going all right.
Yeah, but like you imagine if one tried to sell that like that who was the famous rivalry with Grosjean and Magnus on the Haas team? They fucking hate each other.
Yeah, Magnussen. Yeah.
Magnussen. Yeah. And imagine if they
the
were
boss was always like, stressed, the guy the goatee. Yeah.
What the fuck? We are family. You're just like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with creating a good environment. But
yeah, but
it needs to be a high-performing environment as well.
But I just think like there should be a little ban on the word family in social media.
Yeah.
Around teams that have got multiple guys racing.
So what's the word then you can replace it with instead of family?
Fighters. More real. Dogs. Fighters. Mongrels. Dogs. Pack of mongrels fucking going at it.
Yeah. Pack of wild, untamed animals. Brumbies.
All right, we'll get those t-shirts done then.
Big, just a t-shirt that say big dog got to eat.
Big dog got to eat.
Just woof. I just want a t-shirt that says woof on it.
Good stuff. All right. Good show. Thanks to Daryl Impey for his podcast Fish.
I hope he doesn't listen to the first half of the day.
I think he will.
Nah, he won't.
He's got too much on next couple of days.
But yeah, I was just joking, obviously.
Yeah.
Why am I fucking explaining myself to you guys?
Exactly.
No, we're all family, eh?
Yeah.
Wild dogs.
All right. See ya.
All right. See ya.